Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Good morning. Next Sunday, I'm scheduled to open up the Zendo to have other people join me in a limited way. And I will need people to let me know in advance, either email me or register on the website that they're going to be coming. I'm only going to allow up to 9 people. I have some reservations about it because, as I expected, lately we're seeing a rise of cases in Florida. I don't really know how honest the accounting for what's going on is to be trusted. View that the governor and other people and who are very interested in seeing the economy get going again. So I think we're just beginning to see the first rise of opening things up. And then, so I'm going to keep my eye on it. I think as long as we're really diligent about how we operate here in the Zendo, you know, I'm willing to go through the effort if I get enough interest. I'll continue to do the Zoom, so that means that people who are not local or who prefer not to come because they're just not prepared to yet, that's fine. We'll continue these sessions. Okay, my millennial kids, they're now in their 20s and my oldest is 30, 31 actually. When they were a lot younger, they used to use this saying called, well, that was random. Oh, how random. And the way I interpret that saying was that, well, that was unexpected. So I would like to talk about the unexpected. We have these sidewalks in our neighborhood. I was one of the first houses that was built in this. This is a new development 20 some years ago. And each one of the houses planted 2 oak trees. And after the oak trees were planted, they put the sidewalks down. So now, unexpectedly, the sidewalks are rising at the seams where the roots from the trees would run under. So unexpectedly, I have a neighbor who continuously trips and falls over these sidewalks. Lots of commotion was created with the Homeowners Association about what do we do about these sidewalks? And that's all well and good. But how many times do you have to trip over something to recognize that it's not unexpected? Really? So this brings us to what? To how are we observant of what's going on around us? How observant are we really? And how caught up in our mirage, in our future tripping or living in the past, are we every moment? That we continuously do these same things, even though we know. Or another example is, you know, we all have these sort of gut feelings that something we shouldn't be doing. So I just know if I don't put something under that egg and I drop it, you know, I'm going to make a mess. Just ignore that and go ahead. And the egg drops and you make a mess and you say to yourself, well, damn, why didn't I listen to my intuition? Sometimes it's very painful not to listen to our intuition, right? So time, this is sort of a little sidetrack here. Time is a construct. Where is time in the very moment? Just something to think about. If you like thinking about things like that. So another more relevant area of this whole subject of the unexpected. I was going for my walk yesterday, and a neighbor was having a party. And there was no social distancing going on at the neighbor's house. And there were all these cars parked out front. So I had to walk around this one car that was parked at the stop sign on the corner. So I thought, well, you know, not to be judgmental, but stop signs, you know, you have to sort of be able to see where you're going. And usually you don't park right at a stop sign. You give a little space so that, you know, people can use the intersection appropriately, whatever. So then I noticed that right next to where the driver's door was, there was a black snake run over several times. About 3 or 4 foot black snake, beautiful snake, dead on the road. I've seen this many, many times. So what's happening here? Was it an accident? Sure, it could have been. Somebody ran it over without noticing that it was there because what? Again, they were not seeing the unexpected because they were somewhere else, not in the moment, not really seeing what's going on. Or they could have run it over on purpose. So where does that come from? Some over 50 years ago, I started to ask this question about reptiles and humans. What is this? What is this fear and this hatred towards these beings? And is it justified and is it real? So as a young teenager, I became very interested in herpetology and I studied it extensively. I collected reptiles, I learned all about them, and I came to the conclusion that no. The thing about it is that our fears and our anger and our ignorance, you know, the Four Noble Truths, wow. How often do we have to go back to this basic understanding of where suffering comes from? And think about it. What's going on here? You know, it's like, how can you really be surprised at what's happening racially? Such ignorance. And it isn't a sudden thing. I mean, now we have phones and we can photograph all this stuff, right? The horror of it. But it's not random. Causes and conditions. We can understand practically everything that is happening in this world by looking at it clearly, openly, and asking, what is this? Honestly. Not looking away. Not avoiding, not making something up about it, but just clearly, honestly approaching our lives and those around us, walking down the sidewalk, paying attention, seeing the root of the tree. You know, people talk about being grateful. You can't pick and choose what to be grateful for. If you're going to be grateful, you have to be grateful for everything. There's no exception. Why is that? Where does compassion enter in? An intimacy with life. So part of this having to shelter in place and being isolated, one of the beauties of it all is this slowing down, what we call slowing down, which just means not being preoccupied, future tripping in the past, ignoring what's really going on, clinging, 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 grabbing, 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 acting on external stimuli to avoid dealing with our lives that we're not really happy about and not content with and don't really care about and don't really like, and the angers and the frustrations we have with those around us, and now we have to live with them all the time. All of this drama that we're experiencing in the world, where does compassion come in for this? So I can't resent or be angry at this person who keeps tripping over the sidewalk. I feel bad for her. Some of us only have to trip over it once and we get it. Sometimes have to trip over that rise in the sidewalk twice or three times and we get it. Some of us see it and step over it. And some of us say, oh, maybe I should fix this so my neighbors don't trip over it, because they may not see it like I do. You know, that leads me into what the Bodhisattva path is, right? It's being awake to what's happening in this moment as clearly as you can be. And from the place of true gratitude and compassion, seeing what needs to be done. And then you see how far from reality and how painful and how much suffering it causes to run that black snake over. You don't even realize the effects that it has on all the other beings around it. Through your ignorance and ignoring and selfish action, you don't see what you're created and what you've contributed to. Part of it is we're really stuck here because we have these bodies and beings, and we are going to kill things. We're going to run things over with our cars. It might just be bugs, bees, butterflies, frogs. There's a whole study about how many frogs' lives have been saved because people are driving around their cars in the rain, running over frogs, and how it's affected the ecosystems in different localities. You know, the effects of causes and conditions. So, you know, wonderful things are happening in terms of changing our attitudes, how we see things, and how we move through the world. And its effect is positive, you know, in the sense that it's causing less suffering. So people are recognizing all kinds of things, like, I don't need to be so hectic in my life, you know. Eating at home isn't so bad. People are actually even exercising more than they were when they could go to the gym. And they're starting to recognize, wow, being healthy, that's kind of going for a walk every day. It's amazing how much better I feel just by going for a walk every day. So people's energy is shifting, and that's all great. My purpose really is to just put out the warning. Pay attention. Don't trip. Don't hurt yourself. Don't run over the snake or the squirrel if you can avoid it. You can't always. Kwan Sambosa. So, you know, you don't have to look very far to look for what you can do to make the world a better place. It's right there at the tip of your nose, right where you are. You know, sometimes we get really caught up in worrying about things we can't fix. We're looking at the big picture and, oh my God, the big trouble. The world's falling apart. There's nothing we can do. Oh my God. Just start where you are, right? That's what we have to do. Start right here. Just be all we can be. So asking, you know, what is this? Great. Some early Buddhists used to talk about the body being this bag of bones, sort of a derogatory sort of way of saying, you know, the body's to be discarded, you know, don't get it. It's just immaterial, you know, spiritual awakening. You have to keep, you know, Don't worry about your body. But the body, everything that we experience is part of the perfection. While we have it, we have to be grateful for it and respect what it is that we're doing here with it. So congratulations on continuing your practice and showing up. Congratulations on doing what you can to notice and say, what is this? I'm grateful for all the great work each one of you is doing in your lives by waking up. We're part of the great awakening. It's happening because we're doing it. Here we are. How are we doing?
I want to share something. It's so synchronistic. It's incredible. I get up on Sundays early at 6, and then by 8, I'm up in the mountain. And it's wonderful, you know, before anybody kind of begins to. And as I'm walking, going on my bike to the foot of the mountain, I see all these animals that have been run over on the road. A squirrel, you know, a swallow. And there was three. I mean, it's just 7 blocks, you know. And Paloma, I forget how you say that in English. Anyway, you know, what's that animal that represents peace? I'm sorry, I hate when this happens.
A dove.
You know, and I just kind of sat there. How did this happen? You know, was the man not looking? Was the squirrel not looking? Was the dog not? You know, like, I asked all that, you know? And, yeah, causes and conditions, you know? And thank you for this talk. It meant a lot to me. It, just from a synchronistic point of view, like, yeah, thank you. That's all. Simple. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for noticing.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So, just to be clear, I'm no saint. My wife insists I kill the flying ants that are in the bedroom. And I do.
I know.
So.
I kill ants every day. Yeah.
I do, you know. I ask them to leave. They don't listen. So, yeah, you know, here we are. We're on the planet and we're going to have an effect. And that's the way it is. But we can alter our effect by paying attention.
So it got me thinking how strong that push to identity or identification is. And it's actually, if I can believe this person who's doing all this research and setting up this program, and a lot of people do, that identity is a real powerful tool to help people. Because if you can set up a structure where their identity is comes out, and they can start to make social connections out of that identity, they can make risk and consequences and rewards out of that identity. That starts to lift them out of the hole they're in. Okay, but obviously, from a Buddhist point of view, if that's carried too far, where you're constantly identifying, constantly thinking, and I go, well, how different are we from the ants here or the squirrels here in your guy's story? Because we're just going about doing what we do. The squirrels just going about doing what they do. The ants just doing what they do. And are we really any different than scurrying around just doing what we do?
Yeah, it's the mind.
Yeah.
It's the consciousness. It's that choice.
But we're not, we don't often use it.
No, of course not. So we can act like animal, quote, animals, or we can be humans. So, you know, the level of our contribution or not to the well-being of our other beings on the planet, as well as other humans, has to do with how grown up and awake we are. Now, the growing up process does require healthy ego, does require identification, but that's growing up. That's becoming used to being in a body and having an identity. But that identity, when it's unhealthy, becomes the problem. And that's where you're not seeing any longer how what's motivating you is something that you grasped onto as an identity, which isn't real. So, you know, part of the process of this growing up is all the tragedies that happened in childhood. You know, the lack of love, the angry parent, the alcoholic, the divorce, the crazy uncle, the whatever. You know, there's so many things that happen, the bad things that happen at school, the way we're judged and put in our place, and all these things that interfere with a healthy development. So understanding, you know, ourselves, meaning understanding what we're not, those things that we're identified with that are not really who we are, is part of the maturing process as an adult. So early on, as a young adult, you might blame your parents for all your problems. Well, if they weren't such shitheads, I would have my life together now. And at some point, you have to take responsibility for yourself and go, okay, well, this is my life, and I'm the one who has to, you know, be responsible for it. You know, that whole journey of growing, becoming, waking up is this, what we call our path. Eventually, what would be nice is if enough of us really did mature into beings that were awake and could help guide the rest of us so that the world would be a better place. So much of our culture is the lowest common denominator. Well, it's just business. It's just, you know, the way we do things. What's the matter, you know? We're just being human beings. We're greedy. Okay, so we're greedy. I mean, you know, eventually we go to heaven. Who cares? Let's just be who we are. But all that is nonsense. That's deluded view. It's pushing things away. It's not really acknowledging life the way it really is. You know, it's a problem. So go ahead. You know, I mean, it's just like, suffering is useful. When I say you have to be grateful, you have to be grateful for that sidewalk you tripped over and hit your head. Because clearly you aren't paying attention. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So approaching our problems from identifying with a particular group or culture or color of our skin, there's a point where it's necessary to recognize your cultural heritage. And, you know, like, it's really wonderful to know who your parents were, who your grandparents were, who your great-grandparents were, what cultures you come from. What is all this fabric that helped build what's happening for you today? Where did all this come from? This comes back to this thing that I was saying about the snake. Why did I study reptiles so intensely? I didn't identify with them. I identified what was the problem, But I had to look deeply at the identity. What was the identification there? And what was the problem with it? So the thing about being free of not identifying doesn't mean that you don't recognize the diversity and the wonderful contributions that all this different creative energy contributes to all of our experience. We can't like just say, you know, it's to me being as open as I am to whatever you, whoever you are, the way you are, I don't care. I mean, I'm not at all judgmental about anything that way because I don't want to be judged either. I want to be free to be myself too. But, you know, the whole idea for someone to say that this group is better than this group just blows my mind. It's like, I have never put a teacher on a pedestal. You know, there's no way I would follow a guru to the extent that I would not see that he and I or she and I are the same. Buddha nature, we all have the same Buddha nature. For me, it's impossible to have a hierarchy of somebody's better than somebody else because of whatever, education, money, color of their skin, the fraternity they belong to. All of that crap means nothing to me. That to me is freedom. People who are hung up in identifying with all those different outside things that they think makes them into something, it's a load of crap. That's not real. Those are just structures we create to keep society going the way it is. And some of those structures are really useful, but know them for what they are. They're like, you know, a car. Some people really identify with their car. They think it makes them a man, you know, or whatever. But it's just a car. It just gets you somewhere. These structures are just to get us somewhere. And if they're not working, we change them. If they're not correct, we fix them. If the bridge needs repairing, we repair it. You know, this comes back to do what's in front of you. It's like, okay, there it is. It needs a repair. Take care of it. But identifying with it and saying, hey, this isn't my sidewalk. It's your sidewalk. I don't have anything to do with it. I got enough of my own problems to deal with. You know? So that's why, you know, then we have lawsuits, right? Somebody comes along and sues them for tripping over their sidewalk.
Well, there's something in the law called open and obvious defects. So if you trip over an open and obvious defect, you can't then turn around and sue the property owner because the law says that was open and obvious. You should have seen it. And even if you didn't, you're still charged with the knowledge. Anybody that was paying attention minimally would have seen it.
Yeah.
So this thing about one of my favorite plays and writers, actually a guy who went to my high school, Arthur Miller. So the play Death of a Salesman, and Willie Loman has the line, attention must be paid. He lives his life in such a way that he doesn't really understand or appreciate what's going on around him. And he's totally self-centered in his pursuits. And so that's a, for me, an example of wrong-headed thinking.
Yeah.
And that's that can lead me astray and has led me astray. So with the sidewalk, it's my responsibility to pay attention where I am and where I'm going. And so if not, then you can't really protect people from themselves. You know, I guess that you could paint in yellow that piece of the sidewalk that's raised to try to make it more obvious to people.
Yeah.
But if they insist on continuing to do the same thing, it's one of those definitions of insanity. Doing the same thing over again and expecting different results. Right? To what extent do I have to be concerned or obligate myself to try to fix this problem? I think I'm kind of shoveling against the tide there. I can only do what's reasonable. But I really liked your talk. When you were talking about the pandemic and the numbers, you know, it's even worse, I think, than you mentioned, because there are people in the government, et cetera, that are falsifying the numbers in order to try to encourage people to ignore the restrictions with the intention, the governmental officers or entities are trying to force people to get back out, go back to work. They want the economy to improve. And so they're trying to hide the truth, and they're trying to lead people astray. And so, again, I have to pay attention. And like you were saying, through our practice, to observe what's going on around me. It becomes difficult at times, because if there's so much information, false information, fake news, etc., out there, then it becomes really difficult to discern what's the truth and what's false. But ultimately, I have to trust my own powers of observation, and my default still has to be, how can I help? How can I be loving and compassionate, improve my situation as well as people around me? And it becomes really difficult when I keep running into people who are not operating with that premise, but people who are operating out of fear and ignorance. And I can't really butt heads with them, because I'm not going to change their minds.
No.
They're not going to change my mind. So it's kind of like with the raised sidewalk, I have to realize this is what I'm confronted with, and I have to go around it. I have to go around these people, and I can't engage in that kind of useless argument that gets me nowhere.
Yeah.
And so that's a good lesson from my practice. To remember that, at least for me, the problem, I am the problem. The problem is my thinking, the way I look at things. And if I keep, I'm also the common denominator.
Yes.
So if I keep bumping into things or tripping, it's because I'm not paying attention and I'm not seeing what's really there.
Yeah.
I'm seeing maybe what I want to see, or I'm not really looking.
Yeah.
So I just want to kind of give some follow-up to my share last week. So yesterday I drove to Naples And I got to see my mother, who was in the hospital. And she is fortunate that she had to go to the hospital, because now she's getting the care that she needs. She was living in an independent living situation, which she really was beyond her capabilities to live that way. So we've gotten her some extra help, and I'm really encouraged that she'll live to at least next month. She'll be 101. So that's pretty good example for me.
Yeah.
And even she knew that she needed to ask for help. And that's often a stumbling block for me, that I keep thinking, well, I should be able to handle this problem, or I think I can handle it, or if I ask for help, I'll seem weak by asking. But that's a lie. That's false information appearing real. That's my own fear. So I have to know it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to accept it. And it's not that there's anybody out there that's better than me, but there are people that have more experience than me. Mm-hmm. And I think that no matter how much meditation I do, I'm still going to have blind spots with respect to my own thinking and my own behavior. And so it's important for me to be able to share with other people and be willing to accept what they observe about me, and try to incorporate that and take suggestions without having to feel like that makes me less than, or I'm not good enough, or any of these other dialogues that I've had going as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate having the opportunity to participate in these sessions, and with your insight, you helped me quite a bit to be have my eyes opened even further, hopefully, see what's going on. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ross, and thanks for the update. Glad to hear that you got to see your mom. That's great. So something you said made me think about it. Our conversation about generosity and how and compassion, and how compassion, you know, and generosity, you have to be generous for everything, including those stubborn people you come up against that you rub that they rub you the wrong way. So that's a great place for compassion to come out, is where you see somebody and you see all their ignorance and their fear and their anger and their inappropriate behavior. And it's and the thing about compassion, and because Buddha nature is equal in the sense that everyone has it, when compassion is working, is open, is non-dual, there's no criticism one way or another. It's just the flow, outflow. It's actually, I like to think of it as love, the outflow of unconditional love. That is such a powerful influence. It has been in my life. Those people who have looked at me without judgment, even in my darkest times, and have accepted me nonetheless at that level, you know, they're not that they've accepted my actions necessarily or my behavior when it wasn't appropriate, but they accepted that very deep me, you know, at the core. That's what's called mind-to-mind transmission. That's what's called heart-to-heart transmission. So that can happen even between someone who apparently isn't paying any attention at all. It's like the subtlety of our energy patterns and the underlying current of life force that connects us all is so dynamic that there's no way that any of us individually can understand or put it in any sort of box or category or understanding in our ordinary mind. So that non-dual, compassionate equanimity for everyone, that's the ticket. And that's the ticket. So just keep doing that, you know, keep being compassionate, keep being a loving person. And that's the ticket. I think, you know, the more we can do that, the more we improve the way the world works.
I think that's what people are really protesting about. They're saying, see me.
Yeah. See me. Yeah. Is that what you said? See me? Yeah. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I would like to say, because of the way I act, it takes as much time to kill the ant and take it outside as it does to kill the ant.
Say that again.
It takes as much time to pick up the ant and take it outside as to kill it. And my kids think I'm really weird, but they do it now too. An ant in the house, they go and pick it up and we take it outside. I'm not a saint either, but that's the least I can do.
Thank you, Nancy. I do that with spiders and sometimes with ants, but unfortunately I get really lazy and complacent. And
I understand. And the other thing I wanted to share is that we have a similar situation in my homeowners association in Venice with the sidewalk. And their solution is to cut the tree down.
Oh,
and that hurts. I have this ongoing discussion about how that's not the solution. it's an ongoing discussion.
Yeah. Well, keep at it. Hi, Peter. Right. Go ahead.
We actually do, white people seem to be talking about race these days. And I'm just kind of noticing the shift in myself is kind of like, yeah, I kind of know black people have gotten killed by cops. It's like, yeah, that's really not acceptable. And how long has it been going on?
Yeah.
And it's interesting watching the shift in me, just kind of seeing what's happening to little degree that I do.
Yeah. This isn't new. Yeah. We just weren't paying attention, you know, to the extent that we could have. And there was a time that we were, you know, I think when Martin Luther King, who really embraced all races and really, and at that time, because of television, the way it was, there was a lot of exposure of what was happening, like Selma and other places and all that really ugly head of racism surfaced then. And now I think it's another version of that, but it's, I think this is different in some respects. It's also, I think it's definitely a movement, just not just a protest. It's like, it's getting into our consciousness, like you say. So us white people. And that matters because we have the power. We can help this change tremendously by being awake to what it really is, and you know, making those institutional changes that we need to. So it's not going to go away, but we can at least call it what it is, and when it comes up, treat it appropriately, you know, not allow people to get away with it, in other words. That's I think what needs to happen is, you know, it's like Nancy in a very small way just taught me this same lesson. She said, well, you know, it takes just as much energy to pick the ant up and take it outside. You know, it's like that, you know, that's an example of how we can educate and just open people up to seeing things differently. Well, you know, there's another way to look at this.
Well, you talk about sidewalks and such as kind of like the lead in. And I think it's even more direct than that, from my own experience, sort of bringing it home. Yes, going for a walk, whatever. And this week it was the same lifted problem with the trees and tripped over it again. And I couldn't believe I tripped on the same sidewalk crack as the week before. What am I doing here? What? How could I miss that? And you know, obviously the answer is you weren't paying attention. And so it's a, you know, kind of a great teaching there, you know? It's that shock of recognition that you really weren't really, you knew it was there, and yet you still tripped on it. So funny.
Yeah. Well, you know, looking at life like it's an adventure and a journey and your teacher, it makes it so dynamic. And how can anybody be bored? I mean, you know, when life is your teacher, because you keep bumping into things and asking that question, how could I have done that? I guess it's not asking, you know, and just keep doing the same things over and over again. That's different. But yeah, that's practice all the time, right? It's not just sitting. Yeah. Cool. Watch. I'll probably go for a walk this evening and trip and fall. Karma. Boom. Hi, Brian. I see you there. Your lovely backyard.
I will. Yeah, I agree with what you were talking about. I think race is an unfortunate word in a biological sense. It's not really that important because speciation, which is the ability to successfully interbreed, is really the important thing for passing on characteristics. So race is kind of there's races inside different species that have to do with geographic variation, but it's not that meaningful in a real biological sense. But what we're doing, I think, in part, is trying to overcome something that at one time was a huge advantage. Racism, and of course, our ability to lie like rugs, are two very powerful techniques for dealing with a pre-industrial society existence. You weren't part of the tribe, you're a stranger. Even if you had the same skin color and stuff, you're dead meat.
Yeah.
So racism is a hindbrain kind of, it's way down there in the lower portions of the brain. And I think in part that in our ability to simply deceive, which is one of our real superpowers. We don't have any poisons. We can't fly. We can't breathe water. But we can lie. We can lie to the point where everyone goes over the edge of the cliff with us. We have a couple of really powerful things like that working against our constitution. Personally, I don't think I've ever seen a solution to racism. I've seen some ideas that suggest why it's a bad idea, which I agree with, and why we should change it. But the concept of racism or fascism, which is kind of the social equivalent. We know it's bad, but I think if you're desperate or if you have other issues, it's something that you can fall back on. And maybe that's why it's been so hard to get rid of this. How long ago was the Civil War? That didn't fix anything, really.
Yeah.
You know, it just brought it to the fact that we were failing. I mean, but I agree with everything you said. And I really hope maybe this time we will pay attention, and I think it is different. I hope it is. My whole life certainly has been, it's been part of. We kind of got the sexual revolution going. We got some things going in terms of the 18-year-old vote. We did get out of Vietnam, but this is kind of a bigger problem, and it's I think almost more fundamental. It's racism. Anyway, thank you for the talk. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for sharing that. Appreciate it. every once in a while, you know, we're so fortunate. We have these bright lights that come into our cultural world that help raise us up through music and art and, you know, just bring us to another place of being able to envision a better tomorrow than we have today. I'm so grateful for the healing power of music in our lives and how much that's contributed. So music is a wonderful part of our lives, and that I know Imagine is more than that, but that's what it reminds me of. So thanks for wearing that t-shirt today.
And I can't tell what, yeah, but this is a reference to Lennon.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, I think we've covered it all. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining me today. Be well, enjoy your lives. It's all we got.